There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Now,
Marchand shoots, he's gone!
It's the show that's all about hockey.
What a stop!
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers.
Pasta with a rocket!
On Boston's home of the Boston Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning of another bonus half hour today as the reshuffling of the schedule in the Stanley Cup playoffs has the Bruins playing at noon today. So we will take you right up until pregame at 11:30 here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston joined by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers for this first hour. They will have the call of the game coming up at noon, pregame show at 11:30 here on the Sports Hub. Obviously a lot to get to, the three games of this series so far. We'll talk a little bit this morning about the shutdown of the league for a couple of days and the postponements of the games. Overall, we are a show that talks hockey. This is something that's affecting the game. We will address it throughout the course of the show today. But while I've got Judd and Bob here, we're mostly going to be talking about the on-ice product. So if you want to talk about that, we'll do it. But we are also going to talk about what we've seen in these three games so far. And the Bruins down 2-1 against one of the better teams in the NHL. Obviously, as close to a must-win game as you can have today for this team. And they've had a couple of extra days to prepare for it. We were wondering, guys, about the pace of this series and back-to-backs built into the schedule. And now, a little bit of a layoff, chance to regroup. Obviously, some things going on off the ice that were taking up a lot of, hopefully, the players' attention. But now back at it today, and a need to really focus and get the job done today if you're going to even up this series. What have you guys thought of the series so far from the Bruins' perspective? What have they done well? What have they done not well?
Well, talking about last game, there wasn't a lot to like there, Ryan, right? I mean, the one thing you can do is flush it. You know, a lot of things have happened here over the last 48 hours, but and I guess on a positive note, hockey-wise, it's given them a little time to kind of lick their wounds and get ready for the next one. I mean, they probably want to play right away, but you know, after playing back-to-back and 3-4 and losing the way that they did, it was probably good to, to get some practice time in there. And there's a number of things that need to be cleaned up, certainly based on that last game. The penalty killing was not anywhere near where it needed to be. Three of the first four goals were scored on the power play for Tampa. If you can, first of all, the penalties, I know Bruce Cassidy wasn't happy with them, but don't put yourself in a position to take them, I guess, those penalties. You want to play hard, you want to play physical, but you got to play smart. So now that Tampa's awoken on the power play, because they hadn't before, you've got to be a lot smarter. And that's what they're trying to do against the Bruins, because they know the Bruins' power play and what they're capable of. So That's number one for me. Bruce Cassidy mentioned a few things that needed to be cleaned up that he wanted to see improved in the offensive end or the way that they attack them. I'm curious to hear more about that or to see what it looks like here today because they've had trouble getting inside with some of the bigger defensemen that Tampa have.
Five on five has been an issue for the team here early on. If you want to include the Yanni Gourde goal when Jeremy Luzon got picked by the linesman, the Bruins have been outscored 10-4, five on five. And the other thing that Cassidy mentioned, which you know, I think he said it before game three, and it certainly applies after game three and looking ahead to game four, that the way he looks at the series in many ways is, okay, who's going to win the front of the net at both ends of the ice? Because the Bruins at times have gotten away from their bedrock in front of Yaroslav Halak and the way they defend. And at the same time, I think to sort of borrow from the head coach's words, that guys have to be reminded how we score goals. And while they've certainly been successful on the man advantage, I think, you know, that's sort of gone, largely untalked about. The Bruins are 3-for-9 on the power play against Tampa, and they have picked apart a particular weakness with the way that they kill penalties. But how can the Bruins change their attack so they can exploit Tampa and bring a better 5-on-5 game at the offensive end? And that also means getting the defenseman involved. If you look at what the production of the Bruins defenseman has been since the bubble has started, and granted, if you look during the regular season, they're not a team that's really driven offensively from the back end. But they have produced, since the bubble started, this includes the round-robin games, 2 goals from defensemen. 2. And I think as far as assists, they've only got a handful, and they all belong basically to Torrey Krug.
Yeah, and there's some – Bruce Cassidy called out the middle part of his lineup, mm-hmm. Mostly the wingers, the middle part of his lineup. And he called them out before Game 3 that he needed to see more, whether the young legs, he put it, right? And that's probably some of the defensemen as well. And he didn't get the response that he was hoping for. So, you know, and he didn't back off that after that game.
Well, I mean, just from the level of 5-on-5 and you know, they've got to find a way to generate more scoring out of those lines. I mean, you look at what they've seen in the series. I think Coyle's got a goal. Richie's got a goal. But I think just about everything else is Marchand and Pastrnak. And, of course, Bergeron's a big part of that as well. But we've seen this happen to this team before where you get into the postseason and you have essentially one line that's responsible for your offensive production, and it's really difficult to win that way against a team that, as we talked about previewing the series last week, this Tampa Bay Lightning team is deep. They can come at you in a number of different ways.
Yeah. They're built for this right now. I mean, this is that's why they went out and made all those changes. We're seeing a lot of it right now. Just attitude wise, the Bruins knew that they're going to be in for a fight, but 7-1. That's also an embarrassment. So, you know, there's got to be a little bit more will to it. And I'm very curious to see what they do with the lines here today. I mean, Bruce Cassidy made some changes last game, took Corrali out. I think that was injury related, but in fact, I'm almost positive it was. Just 7 defensemen, a couple of different faces in the lineup, looking for a little spark, and kind of backfired, right? I mean, it went the other direction. So I'm real curious to see what he does here today with the lineup and his message to the team.
Yeah, I mean, that's it was, I think there were some head scratching moves in there. I know it was, you know, second part of a back to back. So maybe you're trying to get some fresh legs in there too, coming off a loss. Oftentimes coaches will, you know, maybe tinker with the lineup a little bit. As you mentioned, the Corrali thing, I thought the same thing. It had to be injury related.
I'm almost positive.
You don't feel like that would have been a healthy scratch. Of course, we don't get to know all those details, but.
Well, I think they said unfit to participate, mm-hmm. So it wasn't. I think if a guy's scratched, they say it, right? I mean, it's, you know, he's, no, that's healthy, but unfit to participate is injury.
But right. Ryan, I also think it's so hard to judge whether or not the 11-7 was the wrong decision. So heading in, part of it was
it's easy to say now, right?
Right. Was the Corrali injury unfit to participate? And then at the same time, I think the team was also talking about protecting itself on the back end. So we don't know exactly what the status is of everybody health-wise. That's
if you got a guy banged up on the back end, you might need that extra body if the game goes a different way. Right?
So the opening 20 minutes, The opening 20 minutes of game three had little to do with the combinations and had everything to do with, oh, okay, the penalty killing did not have the answer. And there was also a fortuitous bounce off of Zdeno Chara from the shot from Andre Palat. That puck goes in. Then the Gord goal happens. So then you're down 2-0. But I think in many ways the game really hinged on what happened in the second period. So Tampa gets the all-important third goal to go up 3-0. Then you get on the board, make it 3-1. So what's the response after that? Charlie McAvoy is issued a roughing penalty, and then Tampa Bay scores shortly thereafter, and then they're off and running. And that's sort of where the game seemed to hinge for me.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like when Marchand scores that power play goal, it felt like there was a chance to get back in that game, right? There's still a lot of time left. It's still early in the second period, and you've got a chance to swing it. And the penalties were a problem all night, and that was a really bad time to take one in that situation.
Yeah, you want to be physical. Like I said, you're physical, but you can't cross the line. He got up, and you know, you can argue maybe the other ones, a couple of earlier ones that Bruce Cassidy pointed out to, but I thought that one was a call that had to be made. He got up in his head. You know, not so you want to be physical with Kucherov every chance you get. That one you probably got away from him a little bit. You know, sometimes it happens, but that's where you got to reel in the, you know, be physical, but don't cross the line, especially when they already had a couple goals and you got some momentum from the goal by Marchand.
All right, 617-779-0985, of course, is the number to join us here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Judd and Bob with us for the first hour of the Hockey Show, and we will get to your calls coming up next.
Shoe Center Fire Star!
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show, 617-779-0985, the number, as we take you up until 11:30 today, right up to Bruins pregame. Judd and Bob will have the call of Game 4, face off at noon today. By the way, if you have not seen the schedule going forward, they did keep the back-to-back games for game 6 and 7. If it gets to that point, they will play Monday game 5, and then game 6 is scheduled for Wednesday, and game 7 is scheduled for Thursday. So it is what it is. If you get there, both teams will have to deal with it. Let's get to your calls here. We got Maria in Watertown up first. Good morning, Maria.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Just a couple of things that were really frustrating and disturbing to me about Wednesday night's game. And I never thought I would say this about a Boston Bruins team, particularly with this core of veterans on it. But it just seemed to me that they quit. They quit on their young goalie. They quit on each other. And that is not the comportment or makeup on this team. The other thing is, you know, Bruce Cassidy, I don't know if he outsmarted himself, but, you know, I think he did a poor job of coaching on Wednesday night. And we don't say this often about him, but I understand about back-to-back, but we're talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs here. And you need to go with the recipe that brought you there, the success that brought you there, in my view, to begin with. And I need you gentlemen to explain to me what the value add of Richie is in this lineup, because I have yet to see it. That's all I have to say. I do expect a bounce back because I've learned not to doubt this group of veterans, but if they go down 3-1 to this team, it's a tough, tough hill for them to climb. Thank you for the time, guys.
All right. Thanks a lot, Maria. All right. What do we want to address first there? did you feel like it? Look, it did feel, we're not used to seeing the Bruins handled the way they were handled the other night. I mean, that's for sure. I kind of feel like she does that. I was surprised there wasn't a little bit more pushback from the team. Although things spiraled out of control pretty quickly after they, as we mentioned, they got, they were down 3-1, and then suddenly it was 4-1, and At that point, it felt like, you know, things kind of got away from them, and you make the goalie change, and you know, and obviously that didn't help matters much either, and Tampa smelled blood in the water. But I mean, look, this is what happens. You're playing one of the top teams in the league, and they were coming. They were on their game the other night. Now it's up to the Bruins to respond tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going back to the middle part of the lineup that needs to be better, the wingers, and Richie's part of that. And you know, whether he deserved that penalty or not the other day, he took it, and you know, and they get scored on, and that opens it up. And I know it was a good bounce and went off of Chara's stick, but and they had a great penalty kill on the first one, Carlo's penalty. They really good penalty kill. Lindholm and Nordstrom out there blocking. They blocked three or four shots during that sequence, and they didn't really give him anything. But that middle, I'm still going back to the middle part of the lineup. Lineup changes. We don't know. We already touched on that. You don't know who's injured, who's banged up. If they dress seven defensemen, it's probably for a reason. Sorry, one of the regulars is probably banged up back there. You know, is Clifton? Did he deserve another, you know, game, or do you pull him out? I mean, that's a second guess. Should Richie be in there? Do you want Bjork in there? I mean, you know, your choices are thin right now. So you know, there's plenty of players there, but not players with a lot of experience either. So, you know, does Richie have enough value as a physical presence in the lineup to be in there? That's debatable. He hasn't given you enough yet. He does have a goal, I know, but he hasn't given you enough yet. So, you know, that those types of goals are the goals that you need as well. I mean, you go back to his goal, just digging away, and finally, you know, the puck pushes across the goal line. You need a little bit more of that. So do you take out that size and put somebody in that's maybe a little smaller when you're talking about getting to the net to make plays? So I think the hands are tied a little bit in that sense, but we'll see what he does with his lineup here today. I mean, I'd expect some changes, but not sure 100% where to go to because you don't know who's healthy and who isn't.
Two thoughts with Richie. First of all, he gave it to referee Eric Furlatt after he came out of the box. So he was the guy flagged for the whack on the shin pads. Tampa Bay scores in the power play. He gave it to the referee as he was coming out of the penalty box. And I'm sure the entire Bruins bench was doing the same to the referee. So he was sour about that. But I think to Bob's point,
I think the quote was from Cassie, wasn't it? It's something you see 100 times a game, you know. It wasn't like you got him on the back of the legs. He whacked him across the front of the shin guards.
No, and I, you know,
guys do that in celebration sometimes.
Yeah. I want a second look, but I think that referee was a couple of zones away when he made that call. And I'm sorry. That's where I think you've got to confer with your partner at that point, Wes McCauley. Did I get that right? And I'd like to see a little bit more discussion there. But, you know, I don't want to go off on a tangent on that one. But the other thing with Richie, whether it's him, Bjork, you want to throw Studnicka in there. We're talking Kasha, DeBrusque. Who's going to get inside against a sizable defense? Victor Hedman, Zach Bogosian. These are big men. You bring in Brayden Coburn, Luke Shen, Mikhail Sergachev. How are you going to get inside, win those one-on-one battles in order to score goals? Richie did it once. Obviously, we need more from Richie, and I think the Bruins need to see more from a lot of different wingers on the ice. But that, I think, is the question that confronts the coaching staff and the forwards in order to generate offense against Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Let's go to Ryan in Providence up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
I just got two things. I was wondering what you guys think of Kasha and DeBrusque these past couple of games, because to me they've been non-existent. It kind of feels like we're beating a dead horse with the DeBrusque-Kasha Krejci line. And also, I think a big issue right now is the defensemen with the offense. It's not that they're not even scoring. They can't even get the puck to the net. A lot of blocked shots, a lot of missed nets. And I was just thinking, I was just wondering what your take on the defenseman not being able to get the puck through. I know Tampa's doing a lot, getting a lot of tips, and it's making it tough on Halak. So if we can get a couple bounces, just some tips, it's tough when you just don't have defensemen that are able to get it through, though. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
I appreciate it, Ryan.
Yeah, on the defenseman side of it, is, you know, you have confidence from the offensive blue line, but when things aren't going right, that confidence dissolves pretty quickly. So, like, you know, you're shooting for the purpose out there, right? You're not shooting to score. It's shooting to get the puck down, whether it's for a rebound, whether it's off the side of the net for a tip, whether it's if you don't have anything and you don't have the time to make that play, then you rotate the puck down behind the net, which I was kind of chuckling to myself, and I would have brought it up, except there were so many goals being scored against. Brandon Carlo has that going on right now, where he doesn't have that confidence, even though he had a shot earlier that was tipped in, right, by Coyle. But he dumped the puck down around the boards probably 5 times last game when he got it out at the right point, because he didn't want to get his shot blocked. I'm sure that you know, it's being ingrained in him. You can't get those shots blocked out there. You know, if you don't think you can get it through, dump it back down behind the net, and it's up to the forward to peel off and get to it, right? So he did it probably, I counted at least 4 or 5 times in that game. I've been there, right? I'm sure that the coaches are telling me you can't get that shot blocked. So what's he do? Okay, every time now it's down behind the net. Okay. You live to fight another day. You don't get it blocked out high. But that's right now, getting more offense from the D, getting them involved on the rush, I think will start to help that. But I don't think they've had enough rush chances. I don't think they've had enough speed coming through the neutral zone in order to generate some of those opportunities with the D jumping up in the play.
Here are the flat numbers, by the way, if you want to look. And you have to remember the way that the Bruins are constructed. They're not a team that generates, beyond really Torey Krug, they're not a team that really brings that push offensively from the blue line. If you look at their points percentage from defensemen during the regular season, 23rd out of the 31 teams here in the playoffs. So you had, 24 teams that were involved. The Bruins heading into today's action, 21st. In point percentage among defensemen. Now, Tampa is better, but they're not better by leaps and bounds. So during the regular season, they were 14th. Here in the playoffs, they're 16th. Nevertheless, there's more in there that the Bruins can provide. And maybe what Bob talked about is some of that is your breakout. Some of that is generating some activity through the neutral zone.
Their exits out of their zone were good in the first period the other day. You know, they were much better. And I don't know whether that was Tampa trying to match lines so they weren't forechecking as hard, or what the case was, but, you know, maybe that was some of it. But they were much better at getting the puck out of the zone. You know, you could see them thinking through some of their options when they go back on pucks, the defensemen I'm talking about, and you know, good support from the forwards. That was early, and then everything just caved in after that. But it was there early in the game, and that was something that they had identified. You know, the other part of that caller was Kasha, DeBrusque, and Krejci. And yeah, that's I'm wondering if they keep that together, if they go to something else. You know, they've stuck with that, and it produced a little bit, you know, in the round against Carolina. What's worrisome to me is that Kasha was getting at least one chance a game against Carolina. Those chances have dried up. Mm-hmm. I don't think he got any last game. Maybe one. But not as good as some of the opportunities he was getting against Carolina. Different teams. So, you know, different makeups of teams. DeBrusque had that one game where he had 2 goals. I'm not sure if he's had anything else. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Judd. He had 2 huge goals against Carolina, but in one game. But had the opportunities haven't been there as much.
Yeah, I mean, they were. That line, even when they weren't scoring,
they were generating
opportunities all throughout that first round. Yep. And then, you know, second round, they've kind of gone dormant. The question always becomes, well, it's like, okay, if you want to go in another direction, what's the other direction? And
well, you can move Kasha with Coyle.
Sure you can.
Or you can move if you know.
But then that opens up the age-old question of who plays right wing with Krejci.
Well, but now Charlie Coyle's got the same thing. Because if we look in the playoffs, so last year, part of the brilliance of the run was that it was very static on that third line. Charlie Coyle was playing with Marcus Johansson and Danton Heinen, and he played that way basically for 4 rounds, and they went all the way to Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final. But now you've got a situation where now Charlie Coyle has got a rotating cast of wingers. It was Corrali for a little bit. Now it's Richie. It's been Bjork. Jack Studnicka's played a little bit on that side. So the Bruins have not found any stability with his combinations either.
And he's, you know, another guy who has shown in these playoffs, like he can be a really effective player for you, but he can't do it by himself. And that's part of the problem. 617-779-0985. We'll continue with more of your calls coming up. Judd and Bob with us for another half hour here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
We'll be right back.
98.5, the Sports Hub, the Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston with Judd Zerot and Bob Beers here in hour number one. Normally until 11, today until 11:30. Bruins pregame takes over with Judd and Bob at that point, and the faceoff just after noon today as Bruins and Lightning get back together for game four. We're taking your calls throughout. Billy Jaffe will come up, join us coming up in the next hour as well. Let's go to John. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Yes, guys. I'm calling because I like the show, because I like to vent a little bit. And the last game, I'm a big fan of Cassidy, but he has nobody to blame but himself because for the moves he made. Technically, if you look at the first two games, they were in both games. They could have won both games. And I think if he was going to tinker, I think I would have tinkered a little bit in net. I think they need to get better goaltending as far as Halak or whoever else plays in net. I think if you put the kid at the beginning of the game and not during the game, I think it would have been probably better. But I just think sometimes Cassidy just got to go with what's working and just hope for the best. Let's not hope that this game becomes the reason why they get eliminated. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, John. Look, I mean, if there were ever going to be, you know, a chance, and we talked about this a little bit last weekend, like, would you see Vladar at some point during the course of the series? And the expectation, we asked Andrew Raycroft that last weekend, and he said, I would seriously doubt it.
He hadn't played a game since March 11th. He hadn't seen any live action.
And he's never played in an NHL game before. I mean,
look, it's easy to second guess now, right? I mean, that's what happens when you lose 7-1. But the lineup changes. Corrali comes out because of injury. Somebody else is banged up on the back end. That's why there's 7D in there. So, you know, I think the only one you Clifton, right? You bring him out.
Yeah.
I expect him to be back in there today. Would be my guess, but maybe he was banged up. Who knows? But he was victimized on that on the breakaway goal against by Coleman.
I think Cassidy did admit that one was a coach's decision.
Yeah. Okay. So that one. Yeah. And like I said, that was that breakaway goal by Coleman in game two at a critical time in that game. He went on the rush. He missed the net, and then Char wasn't able to get put the puck further down the boards, and Clifton had a whack at it as well, and he's got to get out of there quicker. He's got to get out of there quicker, more quickly than he did. He's on the rush, perfect. Get involved that way, but now get out. And Coleman sensed it. As soon as Char kind of fanned on that attempt to go back down the boards, Coleman was off and running, and Hedman found him. So, that's where, and I'm sure that, that's Clifton to a T, though. I mean, he's going to do some great things. He'll make some mistakes as well because he's they call it Cliffy hockey, right? He does some of those things which are good, and then some of those things
he just does. He does everything in 100 miles an
yes,
hour.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
It's like if it's good or it's
we're
bad.
Not putting
it's,
it all on him, but that's, that was one that I think that probably got him picked out of the lineup for a game.
Which I think also turns our attention to Yaroslav Halak. I do think that bears talking about. Yeah. I think it's a big ask to ask of him to outplay his counterpart at the other end, Andrei Vasilevskiy. But I don't think it's a big ask to ask him to stop the pucks he's supposed to stop going forward to give the Bruins the best chance to win. That's what I think that you need from him. In most instances, if Rask were in there, then I think the conversation changes. Then Rask has to be the better goaltender. He has to be able to outplay Andrei Vasilevskiy. For Halak, I think it's a little bit different. But you've got to be able to stop the pucks that you're supposed to stop. Give me a little bit more of what I'm seeing from Anton Khudobin in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I mean, they're
stuck
definitely
at the last game.
Yeah.
Right, and there's still a series to go. And just to kind of go a little bit further on Yaroslav Halak, because I want to look back, and everybody wants to talk about his playoff experience and the run that he had in 2010. Well, in the second round, the Montreal Canadiens were playing against the Washington Capitals. Game three, he gets pulled. They're down 2-1 in that series. The Canadiens rallied back. He won the next three, and the Canadiens advance.
I mean, look, there have definitely been a few goals in this series you can point at and go, that's a little leaky. I mean, you'd like to see him make those stops.
Now he's had a couple days, to hit the reset button, and so, shouldn't be any fatigue right now. Yep. And it's see how he bounces back.
Let's go to Randy in Mansfield up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Good morning, guys. You guys make my Saturday mornings. Thank you very much. First of all, Beerzo, you're on the money. I think McAvoy's hurt. I don't have any reason to think it other than second shift in, first game. He just doesn't look right, and he's not strong on the puck. So I think there's something to the fact that they're hurting on the back end. But the reason why I'm calling is there's got to be an X's and O's way out of this mess, right? It doesn't look good right now, but we're too good. And the one thing that I see, and it's frustrating the heck out of me watching the games, is Tampa Bay is skating downhill into our zone every time down the ice. And I just see us, we're giving up the first 10 to 15 feet in our zone every single time. And our forwards, our wingers especially, they are way too deep into the zone. We're not even challenging the defensemen on the point. So, you know, I think that's got to change. There's got to be this X and O way out of this thing. And I also think by getting our wingers more to the point and challenging a little more, I bet we could gamble a little bit. We got to create some breakaways, something to get that defense of theirs turned around and get them thinking defense instead of offense and attacking us all the time. I'll wait to hear what you guys say about that. Thanks, guys.
I appreciate it, Randy.
Yeah, I thought that against Carolina, too. You know, I thought guys were back on the plays, you know, but they're back in the zone. But then, you know, we had a couple point shots get through. Fleury scored two of them, you know, where, you know, you're back, but you're not maybe overplaying it, coming back into the zone. But, you know, they're usually pretty good at that. Some of those shots are getting through right now, and they knew that Tampa was going to come on the attack with their defensemen, especially Hedman and Shattenkirk and Sergachev. These guys are going to be up the ice a lot. And now Bogosian got involved with that the other day. But that's an area right now. I'd like to see the Bruins force. You got guys like Shen. Colburn's beatable back there. You know, Shen is a big guy. He's not real fast. You know, he's a big guy. He's a physical guy, but he's not real fast. Get into some foot races with him. You know, challenge them a little bit to get, you know, to get going back. And I think that's an area right now that it's just, and we will harp on it with the Bruins, the forwards that need to be better. And I think it's, I mean, I'm sure that there's some X's and O's things, but they need to be better. They need to have more will right now. And it hasn't been there. They got challenged last game and it I'm not going to say it backfired, but they didn't answer the challenge. And, you know, I think it's, you know, it snowballed out of control as the game went on, but, you know, they need to answer.
Is the positioning thing at all related to having your backup goaltender starting in the playoffs? I mean, are they cheating back to try to protect him a little bit more?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Not right now. I mean, they vow that they play the same way either way. So whether that's, I do think that sometimes, you know, as a player, there's certain things you do. Maybe if the backup goaltender is in there, certain ways he plays the puck, you know, are there more rebounds? So you have to be a little bit more aware of certain things when another goaltender comes in. So, you know, maybe in that sense, there's a little bit of a difference, but not in the overall approach.
617-779-0985. Got one more segment with these guys to take your calls, and we will do that coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. 617-779-0985 is the number, of course, for your phone calls. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you as we get ready for Game 4 of this second-round playoff series between the Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Do you guys feel good about today's game? I mean, it coming off a 7-1 game, you know, there's been a couple of extra days off, as we mentioned, maybe the team kind of regroup a little bit and help put it behind them. But do you feel good about today's game?
It's hard to get a feel for it, Ryan. It's like, you know, usually we're at least at practice and watching, right? And, you know, have a sense of where things are at, where the morale is, you know, what you know, not entirely, but you have a sense of it. Which just we're nowhere near it, so it's hard to get that sense. I can tell you as a player, like, you know, the mantra now is, look, it's one game. You know, we were an overtime away from being up 2-0 in this series, so, you know, let's address what happened in game three, but let's move on and realize that we can tie the series with a W today. So it's sometimes it's better to get blown out as opposed to losing that one goal game. Like, oh, we're right there, we're right there. This one you had no chance, you know, once things snowballed. So I think it's easier to park that and get ready for the next one. That's the positive approach. That's the positive approach. But I also think that the Tampa Bay Lightning are smelling blood and they're going to come hard again. But it, you know, the Bruins have to have another gear to get to. And you know, they were good at times in both games one and two. But you know, the other day, and I was here glad to hear Bruce Cassidy kind of agree with what we were saying. Like, the first period wasn't as bad as 2-0. It was actually a pretty good period. You had a defenseman that gets picked by the linesman. And you get a power play goal that ricochets off a Chara stick, so on a marginal call. So they did a lot of the things that they addressed in the first period. It was just after that, it went the other direction in a hurry.
Judd, feelings?
I think, you know, to Bob's point, you know, we're so far away from the bubble that, you know, you're not seeing things and talking to people like you normally would, so it's really sort of difficult to get a handle on things. But that said, I do think that having a couple of days off, and it's going to benefit both teams. One thing we haven't talked about, Ryan McDonagh could be back in the lineup for the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's something we don't know, and Steven Stamkos is still a mystery. But I do think that the Bruins, when they're a little bit more rested, we see a better performance.
There's also, you know, I just kind of look at the history of this group of players. And,
we were talking the other day, Judd, as well. Like, you know, people say, well, you know, Tampa's playing back-to-backs. Why doesn't it affect them? Well, why doesn't it? Because Vasilevsky's in his mid-20s. Braden Point's in his mid-20s. Kucherov's in his mid-20s. Hedman's in his mid-20s. All right. Now,
recovery time's a little shorter.
Yeah. You could, and, you know, Halak is 35, I think it is. You know, Chara's 43. Bergeron, mid-30s. Krejci, mid-30s. Marchand, 30. That's why Bruce Cassidy is saying we need the younger legs to carry us here today and pull some of these guys along. And he didn't get it. And that was the disturbing thing for me in that game.
I was just going to say, you know, with the history that we've got with this group, you know, you look back at what
they're setting records come up against right now, in the Bruins past. Records for games played in playoffs. You know, aside sure. from Ray Bourque, right? It's Chara and it's Krejci and it's Bergeron and Marchand's coming and climbing the ladder. They've had there's been a lot of playoff games played by these guys.
Well, and look, during the course of that,
that's why it wears
sometimes,
you down.
Well, but you also get, you know, there are times where you get behind in a series. There are times when sure. you throw up a, you know, a massive clunker in
well,
a series.
Well, he wasn't happy with the response in the second period by his team. He's certainly looking for a response today. Talking about Cassidy. So,
and by and large, it feels like during Bruce Cassidy's tenure, when he's not happy, when he calls them out and says, you know, we've got to be better, they usually get a pretty good response out of this group, that the, you know, the leaders of this team step forward and say, all right, we're going to right the ship. And that's kind of why I feel, for whatever reason, it's like you wouldn't think coming off a 7-1 loss, you feel good, but I feel good about this game today because because of the past history that we've got with this team and that they do tend to rebound pretty hard.
Out. Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, I've learned not to do that, you know, because they've impressed in so many situations. So certainly not, but there needs to be better. And it's just the response was a little disturbing in the sense that, you know, the guys that he called out didn't pull their weight, and then we need to see more of it.
You mentioned, Bob mentioned, you know, kind of finding another gear to go to. What does that look like? Is it more physical? Is it?
No, I don't think the physical part of it's something. I think both teams have been physical and being smart physical, you know, not taking somebody's head off. So I don't think the physical part of it is. I think just there's got to be some more will. Yeah, there's some technical things always, you know, if they break down the tape and they see, you know, where can we try to exploit and try to get after them. I know they made a couple of changes, subtle changes against Carolina, that felt that it worked out for them offensively. Now they've had an extra day to take a look at it. And, you know, I'm curious to see what that looks like. Penalty killing, you know, needs to, you know, is it just that they scored three goals because they hadn't scored any in the first two games on the power play? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, has Tampa figured something out to you know, be more effective on the power play? You know, I know what Kucherov on the left wing side, and, you know, they kind of move him around a little bit. So now he's over near, you know, he comes way out. He arced way out on one of those goals to make a play, to find some time and space for himself. So they're going to have to make a couple of subtle changes there to make sure that the power play isn't a weapon. But this, now it's, you know, we talked about getting inside. We talked about the will to get to the front of the net, things like that, getting shots through, little details to the game that need to be, need to be a lot better than they were in game three.
And that's where we'll maybe see how dialed in the Bruins are across the three periods and maybe beyond. How do they win some of those one-on-one battles at the hash marks, in the corners, to keep pucks in, to get pucks out? I think we'll have a pretty good idea early on in the game.
We'll be listening for the call. Appreciate the time, as always. And we've got Billy Jaffe coming up next. He will join us to talk a little bit more about the Bruins, as well as some of the other series going on around the NHL. We still have another hour and a half, as we're going to take you right up to Bruins pregame today at 11:30. So your calls welcome throughout, 617-779-0985. We continue right after Sports Hub Headlines.
Shoots and rounds, flashed up the glove.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's streaming on the Sports Hub app.
.985 the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show, hour number two. Don't forget, bonus half hour today as we go right up to Bruins pregame at 11:30. Judd and Bob have made their way off to go get ready for the call of the game. You can hear them again in another 90 minutes, but we are not alone because we welcome in our buddy Billy Jaffe. You know him, you love him, as part of the Nesson Bruins broadcast, working a little NHL Network, gone national this weekend as well. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. What's up, Billy?
Just another day in gorgeous Secaucus.
Oh, it's lovely this time of year.
It is, and yes, just like in Boston, I think the hurricane remnants, was it Laura, are coming this way, and it's grayer and actually thankfully a little cooler than it has been, but all good talking hockey. Have the late shift tonight, so just going to have all day to watch hockey.
That's not hockey, a bad hockey, thing. Hockey. That's not a bad thing. Hunker down in front of the TV like the rest of us for a good chunk of the day.
Exactly.
All right, so first and foremost, let's talk about a little bit about the Bruins series to this point. Bruins win game one, Tampa comes back, wins in overtime in game two, and then game three, what happened?
Well, bad games happen, bad results happen. I thought the Bruins looked tired. In my opinion, they did. I thought they looked tired from Yarrow all the way out. I didn't think that they initiated an awful lot. I think they reacted to just about everything, and I think we know that they're and almost any other team in the NHL is in a good spot when they do that. The lineup was, you know, not my. It was curious to me. I understand that Corrali injured, very disappointing because, you know, he'll make a mistake here and there. But Sean, he's that Swiss Army knife, and he's a playoff performer. And I think the Bruins, you know, they need him in the lineup. But then the defensive. Questioned. I mean, I understand. I get you're trying to get 7D. I'm all fine with that. But I just, you know, I thought keeping Connor Clifton in would have been at least in my opinion, more beneficial. I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and second guess, you know, coaches from much farther away. And they wanted to get some more size in the lineup. That's what they figured they needed. And, I you know, I'm expecting to see Connor back in the lineup today. I would imagine they would go with the standard 12 and 6 today, RJ, in the lineup.
I would hope so. If nothing else, because I feel like, you know, in general, and granted, it wouldn't have mattered much the way the game played out on Wednesday night. But, you know, in general, this team is when it's going well, that's one of their strengths, is being able to throw four lines at you who can be effective.
Yeah.
You know, if you, especially in the second end of a back-to-back, if you've got to be double shifting guys constantly throughout the game to accomplish that, it's really not the same.
Well, okay, but the counterpoint to that is, if you're going back-to-back and the guys that you want to play more, you know, Bergeron, Pastrnak, Marchand, are in the good enough shape to handle it, and Coyle, et cetera, then I'm okay having those guys repeatedly on the ice. But if you're concerned about the defense crew, especially the fact that, A, they're a little smaller, and, B, they've got, you know, the older captain in Chara getting, you know, worn down, then I do understand it. I just don't – I don't know. I thought putting – in two guys that hadn't played much, you know, understatement, is a difficult ask in a back-to-back. One guy hadn't played a game in, what, 5 months?
Right.
In John Moore. And that's a hard ask. But, you know, again, I think the size factor came into play. I also think having a couple of days off now, the extra days off, allows Bruce to go back, you know, to his 12 and 6 formation. And I don't know. I'm not expecting Corrali to play in this game. Just my take. You know, we'll know in about probably 45 minutes when Bruce talks. But I'm just, my gut says that he won't. And then therefore, you know, you still have Lindholm in the lineup. And the other question is, you know, what do you do with the other spot up front?
What have you thought of Halak in the series so far?
I think he's been Yarrow. And what I mean by that is, this has been, you know, Yarrow in his career. He's been unbelievable at times, and he has been marginal at times. We know about the game earlier in the playoffs where the goals went past the glove. In this series, I think, you know, everybody's going to focus on game three, but to me, they did the right thing in pulling him, because if he is tired a bit, get him out. Now the Bruins are going with him no matter what, RJ. Like, this is it,
sure.
Right? So now he's had a couple of days. He's he's in fantastic shape. He's a great pro. However, now, you know, being in great shape and being durable hockey-wise are two different things. Let's hope that he's recharged that battery enough. And that, you know, he's ready to go, because, you know, the Lightning players, you know, they're going to keep throwing everything at him. They're going to try and tire him out. They're absolutely going to. They're going to challenge him, and he's got to be up to the task. He's been a mixture of everything, from fantastic to, whoa, not so good.
And that's, I mean, look, you know, we've looked at him over the course of the last couple of years, and he's been a tremendous number two goaltender, right? I mean, you can't really ask for a whole lot more. The guy comes in, he gives you a chance to win. He pretty much wins at the same percentage as a starting goalie. It's a different animal when you get into the postseason, and you have to start every night or every other night. It's just, you know, it wears on a guy a little different. The pressure's a little different. And, you know, so over the course of the last couple of games, and you know, there's been some leaky goals that you got to have at this time of the year. At least in the playoffs, if not this time of the year, because you're usually not playing at this time of the year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I always say this. I think I said, if I didn't say it on your show last week, I think I probably said on Nesson or whatever, one of the shows I did. You know, you don't have to be the best goalie in the world, But you have, you know, to win in the cup, you've got to be the best goalie for your team, you know? So, I mean, Jordan Binnington epitomized that last year with St. Louis. He was not the best goalie in the world. He stunk some games. He did. Mm. He stunk. And he was off the charts. Oh, my God, are you freaking kidding me? Spectacular in others. I hate to bring up game seven, but that game seven first period, he was spectacular. And so, you know, you have to have that right personality for your team, and you've got to make the saves at the right time over a course of a seven-game series. And so let's just, you know, we're in a seven-game series right now. The Yarrow needs to have a great performance today. I hope he doesn't have to steal it, because that means that the Bruins aren't playing to their capabilities. I mean, I hope he makes the saves at the right time and be the right goalie for the Bruins today. And I'm not worried about the seven game series. I'm worried about today's game, right? That's it. If the Bruins win today, we'll all feel a bit better. I just hope that he doesn't have to steal it, because if he has to steal it and the Bruins aren't great again, then I'm not going to feel – I'll feel better about Yarrow, but I'm not going to feel better about the team, right?
Sure.
I want them to have a – I want them to have a very capable Bruins performance. You know, look, Yarrow can play games. He played 54 games for the Islanders back in the 17-18 season. So he can play games. He can be the guy. He's played over 50, I don't remember, four or five times in his career. Is he going to be a 65-game goal? No, he never was. But he can play games. The question is, can he play games in this short, effectively, in this short of a truncated season? You know what I mean? In this short of a time. That's going to be the big question. They got to protect him better, too. They do. And if I'm Tampa, look, I guarantee you the guy saw him tiring. Get after him. That's what. If I'm Tampa, I'm trying to get after him. There's no question about it.
Well, and protecting him starts with staying out of the penalty box. I mean, you know, you can't give the Tampa Bay Lightning six power play chances and expect you're going to win that game.
You're right, but what is it? I go back to my previous one of my initial comments, and I don't know if Bob or Judd thought the same thing. I thought they looked tired. What's one of the first things that happens to you when you're tired in hockey? You take penalties. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking as clearly. You're you know, at times you end up reaching or whatever. You know, you try and play. Sometimes it's funny when you're more tired, you try and play a more physical game, and then it leads to the penalties. You know what I mean? Over aggressiveness. Because you know, the mind's trying to take over the body. I mean, you're right. You can't. We all knew that Tampa was going to start scoring on the power play eventually. And even if they didn't start scoring, we knew they were going to get their chances. So you know, if you keep taking penalties, you're going to be screwed. There's no doubt about it.
Are you with us that this is still a winnable series? Bruins can overcome a 2-1 deficit despite a 7-1 loss in Game 3.
It's a lame answer, and I would call myself out for saying this, you know, if it was somebody else, too. I'd be like, come on, you know. I mean, look, if they show up today after a few days off, which I believe they can, and to play a great game. Look, game one I thought was really good. Not perfect by any stretch, but really good. Game two was not great, really not great, and the Bruins were still right in it. Game three was that perfect moment of badness for one team, and the other team's like, okay, you guys are going to give us, forget an inch, you're giving us, you know, a foot. We're going to take 2 miles. That's what happened. Now, does that mean the Bruins can get it back? I'd like to think that they can. Yeah, I'd like to think, RJ, that they can. But if they show up and they don't play with poise and they don't play with structure, no, then they're done. So it's a lame answer, but it's true. It's truly how I feel. I mean, it's if they show up and play with structure and they play Bruins hockey, yeah, they're okay. Somebody else needs to show up. No, I do think that Tampa, and I've said this on your show before, you know, Tampa on paper, I think is a little bit deeper, a little bit better in certain areas. I mean, the big defense is hard to get on the inside. On the other hand, if you can turn them and you can go, you're they're without Ryan McDonough too. You're okay. You could be okay. But if you don't play on the inside against them, you're also going to be in trouble.
What a lame answer.
Is it? I mean, I call myself out too for it. Listen, I'm.
At least you realize it's a lame answer. That's good. It's like, you know, it's like you just, you open up and say, hey, it's going to be a lame answer. So here it is.
Well, right. I mean, is it a winnable series? Sure. Does it feel good after game three? No. But if you can't just, you know, you've got to exit or extricate that feeling of game three. I mean, if you're holding on to game three and you're a Bruin, you know, coach, player, manager, whatever, then don't even play game four. Don't.
Yeah.
Don't.
Well, I walked in here this morning and I ran into, you know, our Bruins producer, Howie Sylvester, and he said, how do you feel about today? I said, I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win. Like, I woke up this morning and I said, like, this feels like, you know, you even the series up and shorten the series to a best of three. I don't expect anything less from this team after what we've seen from them over many years. It feels like in this position, they tend to respond well.
Well, I know, and I'm sure a lot of people, though, are looking back a couple of years to 18 series against Tampa, and I'm sure they say, oh, here we go again. Well, because of course they may be right. Who knows? But on the other hand, this isn't 2018. Let's see what this team is made of. I look, it's not the end-all, be-all if Crowley can't play. And again, I'm personally not expecting him to, but it is a loss as far as I'm concerned. You know, it is. It changes. Now, part of Lindholm's been pretty good, but now we when he's come in, but now you get back to the conundrum of the coil line, of the third line. I mean, think about how good he's been, right? How good the coil has been, and he's kind of had to do it with a plethora of, you know, a right wingers or wingers in general. So, you know, what is, you know, imagine how good he would be if he was with regular guys. You said the same thing about Krejci for the last, you know, couple of years. So, you know, what are they going to do with that line with Corrali? I wouldn't have minded if Corrali was healthy, seeing Corrali and him together again and keeping Lindholm in. I wouldn't have. That right wing spot on that line will become the question mark.
You know what, Billy? The same people who are ready to bury the Bruins right now had already had them buried after the round robin too. So, you know.
Yeah, probably right.
Can I put you on hold because we had to do a quick break and I want to talk a little bit about the other series going on around the league. Can we do that?
Nothing but time to see caucus in the morning, brother. I'm all good.
Billy Jaffe joining us from Sea Caucus, New Jersey, NHL Network this weekend. For Billy, of course, also part of the Ness and Bruins broadcast. We'll get to some of the other series and the break in the playoff action over the last couple of days and how the league handled that. We'll get to all that coming up next. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning.
Shoe center, fire, score!
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bruins wouldn't mind rewinding to game two right now, up one game to none. Down two games to one, game four, Bruins and Lightning coming up. Pre-game coverage gets underway in a little more than an hour. We're going to take you right up until then today. And, of course, your calls welcome, 617-779-0985. Right now, we are on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline with Billy Jaffe of Nesson and working the NHL Network late night shift. Let's talk a little bit about some things going on around the league, Billy. First and foremost, the league shut down the playoffs for the last couple of days. The players needed to take some time, as they have in other leagues, and point out some issues going on in the world. How do you feel like it's been handled from the NHL bubble, from the league, from the teams, some of the statements that they've made, and in particular from the players who, you know, I thought that the Western Conference, you know, gathering of players for that press conference the other day was well done because, you know, it was a show of good solidarity among players who, it was Ryan Reeves said, I normally go to war with these guys, but, you know, I'm proud to have every one of them standing here.
Yeah, it was a different look out west than out east. But I just think that, you know, I don't know if their rules are different, RJ, for postgame coverage or whatever you want to call them. There's their media coverage. Sorry, couldn't get the word out. So maybe that's just, you know, they're able to do that there. I don't know the ins and outs of that kind of thing. But I think that, look, the players I think having, you know, I haven't been able to talk to anybody per se, but just out reading things, seeing things. I was at the NHL Network when this whole thing came down too. And just like everybody else, we didn't have a lot of, we couldn't get a hold of people, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, they were in their meetings. They felt after having a day, and we all know that there were a couple of games the first night that they said that, you know, right away after that game and then the next morning as a players union, they started to say we needed to do something. And I firmly believe it's their right. I believe it's everybody's right in this country to do what they feel is right, not understand what anybody else feels of it. I understand there were a lot of people that supported it. I also understand there were a lot of people that did it. And again, that's their right. But when it's all said and done, this is many people have said this. Doing something like that is, hey, prerogative. They're right, and I think necessary. However, it's what comes after now. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing. And so now, what does the NHL? If we're looking at the little, you know, microcosm of the NHL or the little, you know, system of the NHL, it's just one tiny little thing in the whole big picture. But they've got to do their part. If they're going to take the 2-day stoppage and build on it and make it productive and make it, you know, then it's beneficial. But it can't be business as usual. Otherwise, it doesn't come off as being productive.
Right.
And I don't disagree at all with what Brad Marchand said. I just don't. I just think that, you know, there are a lot of people that said, great, and a lot of people that said, hey, you know what, stick to sports, stick to hockey. Again, both people's prerogatives for all. That's in our free country, that's the way it should be. But I also think that, you know, their people, they shouldn't have to just stick to hockey. Because other people and other jobs out there have opinions that they bring into their job, whether they, you know, mean to or not, they do. And so why can't hockey players, why can't athletes have that as well?
And the league has, you know, if you go to their website right now, you can go to, you know, Hockey is for Everyone. And they, you know, they have spoken out in recent years about inclusiveness as far as whether it be LGBTQ issues, whether it be racial issues. They're trying to, you know, to make it so that the game, which is largely played by white players, is looked at as more inclusive. As you said, I feel like the players are driving this discussion, and now, you know, what's next? You know, the league in the NBA put out, here's what we're going to do. Yesterday they put out a statement and said, look, the players in the league got together, and here's what the owners are going to do. They're going to use their arenas for voting sites. They're going to, you know, run ads during games, things of that nature. That's what I think people are going to be watching for from the NHL is if you want to really be a part of this discussion, then there needs to be action with that. It can't just be, we took a couple of vacation days during the playoffs and we did a press conference and now we're back at it.
Well, because that would be the optics, but it wasn't. They were in significantly long meetings. They were having, you know, discussion immediately after the games on, it was a Wednesday, mm-hmm. and then they were all day Thursday, and even Friday, the Hockey Diversity Alliance, you know, kind of leading the way. There's going to be something coming out. When and what specifically, I don't know. You know, a lot of the arenas via the NBA are, you know, being offered as polling places, and a lot of these buildings are multi-facilities, you know, multi-sport facilities, so... I'm guessing that a lot of these buildings being offered, you know, for basketball also will entail hockey teams, you know, supporting that too. So I don't, RJ, when it's all said and done, I mean, so much is going on in this world right now. I won't speak for you, but it's hard to wrap your head around it at times. And I think the easy thing is to want to just put your head down and you know, one foot in front of the other each day. I'm trying to come up with every cliche in the world.
Well, we all want the distraction of sports right now. And I think I think the sport itself can't blind itself to what's going on in the world and has to realize that they do have a role that they can play in that.
Right. We all love sports. And I've said this for years and years and years. We treat sports differently than any other business because it is fun. It's emotional. It pulls on your heart in the sense of, you know, people seem to, you know, they latch onto their favorite team, right? But so we treat it differently. And we think of the athletes differently because we think of them usually as, you know, we think of them as being able to do things that 99% of us can never, you know, accomplish. But yet, you know, truthfully, I always say this, it's a business. Once you get to that level, it's a business. It's a well-paying business, but there's a lot of other unbelievable paying businesses that an elite few reach to. But we treat it differently than that, and we don't want them. At times, people don't want them to have opinions, and that just doesn't make sense to me because the truth is these guys and women that make it to that elite level have worked their asses off to get there, just like a CEO would work hers or her ass off to get to a certain level, too. And we seem to tolerate those other non-athletes. We allow them to have more an opinion. I mean, even nowadays, maybe we don't. You know, if we don't like what one company says, we don't buy it. If we like what one company says, we buy their product, right? Instead of just allowing people to have their opinion. But anyways, athletes are people. And this is such an imperfect thing that you have to do what you feel is right. And the majority said we want to take a couple of days off. And I firmly believe that I hope that they'll come up with, you know, real good options and plans on this.
Well, they get back to play today, and obviously the Bruins game at noon today, and then tonight you've got a couple of games as well, including the Flyers and the Islanders. Islanders shut out Philly 4-0 in game one. Game two, Philly gets out to a 3-0 lead, blows the lead, and manages to win in overtime. What do you make of that series so far? And there's no reason that Barry Trotz would go away from Varlamov, right?
No. I don't think so. No, I don't think so. By the way, I'm expecting just a little side thing here. I'm expecting Carson Coleman to play tonight. That's just something I got for the Bruins. I'm expecting him to jump in.
Get you a little scoop on the air.
No, I'm expecting. Put it that way. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you know, I'm thinking that he'll play, and still don't. And I'm thinking Connor Clifton plays too. That's my guess. Listen, with regard to the Varlamov and the Islanders, I can't see them going away from him either. I just can't. Why, RJ? Why would you create something, you know, some havoc if you don't need to? You know, yes, Varlamov wasn't great in that last game. And you pulled him, just like Yarrow got pulled by the Bruins. Why would you, you know, so, okay, Grice came in, the team came by, they almost won. You could argue should have won, but it's not should have. They could have won. They didn't. But I would expect Varlamov to be back there. He's played well in these playoffs. He plays well in that system. Why would you mess with him? You know, Barry Trotz did say he expected a lot, you know, to use both goalies here. But, well, truthfully, he has used both goalies now. With Grice coming in, so I wouldn't think. But especially with the days off, like, why would you change? I think you create. I think you open up a major can of worms if you do that. If you trust,
Billy, we'll leave it there. Appreciate the time this morning, and enjoy the lovely weekend in Secaucus. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Well, you got one more night here. I'll be home tomorrow. I will be doing game 5. We're nesting in the Bruins. So thanks for having me, big guy. Have a good day, everybody.
All right, take care. Billy Jaffe of Nesson and NHL Network. joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. All right, if you want to jump in with us, now would be a good time. 617-779-0985. And then Fluto Shinzawa, the Athletic, is going to join us coming up a little bit later on in this hour as well. And we'll talk with him about this Bruins Lightning series, and we can talk with you about this Bruins Lightning series as they head into Game 4 in less than 90 minutes from now. It is Ryan Johnston with you here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show up until 11:30.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985. You can jump aboard. Again, Fluto Shinzawa, the Athletic, is going to join me coming up here in a few minutes. Thanks to Billy Jaffe as well for spending a half hour with us from beautiful Secaucus, New Jersey. As I look forward to Game 4 today, which, again, 11:30 pregame and a 12 o'clock face-off here on the Sports Hub with Judd Surratt and Bob Beers, who were with us earlier in the show, of course, I've been saying, I feel good about today. I do. I feel like this is the kind of game where you'll see a bounce-back performance. I think you're going to see a really strong out-of-the-gate performance from this team, which goes kind of counter to what we saw in Game 3, where I think Carlo took a penalty about 30 seconds into that game, and the Bruins, they killed it off, and they did a nice job on the penalty kill, but that's not a great way to start, especially when you're coming off an overtime loss in a back-to-back, and you put your team right back on their heels early. And that was kind of the story of that game, was penalties at bad times. The penalties ultimately turned out to be a big problem because Tampa's power play was rolling. And three power play goals out of that team, you're not going to overcome that. But I think I also, as that game went on, and we've had some callers allude to this morning, was the lack of pushback from the Bruins once it got to 4-1. They came out in the second period. They got down 3. It was already 2-0. They got down 3-0. But they get a power play chance. Marchand, who, not to point it out, but at some point Tampa going to cover him on that back post? Like, he's just standing back there waiting for those slap passes to come his way and just, angle his skates and kick that thing into the net. But what I was looking to see from the Bruins when it got to be 4-1, they get to 3-1, and then, again, take a penalty, Tampa scores, boom. Suddenly it's a three-goal game again, and you felt like at that point it's like, okay, well, that was probably their chance, and now it's gone, and they're probably not going to get back into this game. But I still wanted to see more top to bottom from the rest of the players. I wanted to see, I wanted to see a little bit more push. I wanted to see a little bit more pride than to take a 7-1 thumping at that point in a playoff series. It's very unlike this team, right? We're not used to seeing it. It's very rare that they get really blown out. Even in games that they don't play well, it feels like there's usually some pushback, or they get a break here or there, or they make their own break, whatever it is. Wasn't the case on Wednesday night. And maybe that was that they were tired. Maybe it was. And it's an excuse. It's nothing more than that. But maybe it was that they were tired. Well, that excuse is out the window now. You've got, a few days to recover. Now you're back at it today. You don't play again until Monday. No reason why you shouldn't see everything that they've got today, because their season is essentially on the line at this point. You lose today, you're down 3-1. You got to win three in a row to take the series against one of the best teams in the NHL. That's a big ask. And so they should play today like their season is on the line. Let's go to Gary and Methuen real quick. Gary, you're up on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. So I'd like to just address the Bruins and their support and their reasons for boycotting and taking the night off the other night. Completely ridiculous. Nobody knows the real truth, and we're supporting, or they seem to be supporting, a person who had warrants for sexual assault.
Gary, that's not what this is about. This is not about Jacob Blake. This is not about any one individual case. It's not.
Which case is it about then?
You know what, Gary? We're not having this conversation. Yeah, that's not. And that's, if you got to lie to get on the air, by the way, because that's not what you told the producer you wanted to talk about. No, you don't have to dump it. That's fine. But if you have to lie to get on the air to make your point, that tells you a lot. Because Gary says he wanted to talk about the Bruins getting a quick start today. Gary got a quick start today. That's not what it's about. And we don't know. By the way, a week later, we don't know all the details of the Jacob Blake case. And we're not trying that case on the hockey show, certainly. But we don't know everything that was involved in that from either side. But if you don't think it's important that professional athletes use their voice when they feel like there's an injustice going on, or a series of injustices going on in their country, well, I don't know what to tell you. Because professional athletes have found their voice. They have found that they have the ability and they have the right and they have the support from their leagues and their owners to step up and speak out. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's good if you're looking for growth as a country, that oftentimes in the past, I would say, you know what? Don't listen to athletes who want to talk politics, who want to talk social issues, because that's really not where their money is made. That's not what they do. But if it's about drawing attention to causes, if it's about drawing attention to major problems in our society, they have every right and they have a responsibility in a lot of ways to do that. And I think that the NHL, the NBA certainly was at the forefront of this. When the Milwaukee Bucks decided we're not playing on Wednesday, that changed a lot of things. And to be honest, I was a little surprised that the Bruins and Lightning even played on Wednesday night. I thought maybe there would be a stoppage at that point. Instead, they had a short moment of reflection before the game, a very short moment of reflection, by the way, before the league shut down for a couple of days and said, let's really take a good hard look at this. And as Billy told us a few minutes ago, hopefully they did that. All right, we're going to continue here. We will talk with Fluto Shinzawa of The Athletic about the series so far, what he expects to see today, and a whole lot more coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is a black and gold freight train. Freight train. Freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show, featuring a bonus half hour today as we take you up to Bruins pregame at 11:30 with Judd and Bob on the call. Joining us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, he covers the Bruins for The Athletic, it is the one and only Fluto Shinzawa. Good morning, Fluto.
Good morning, Ryan.
First and foremost, what have you thought of the series so far? Has anything surprised you?
Well, just weird, just given all the circumstances of the bubble and then the postponement and this and that. It's been very difficult to get, and I'm sure it is for the players to get in any kind of rhythm, and the coaches too, in terms of sync and tempo and feel to the round, just because it's been so upside down. And just in terms of general impressions from the Bruins' perspective, I see it's. Of course, you have to take the 7-1 game into context, but I see the usual issues flaring up in terms of, okay, if the first line isn't scoring, if the power play isn't scoring, then who is? So it was startling to see just how poorly the second line has played, just because of how well they played against Carolina. Just not much from DeBrusk, Krejci, Kasha. And then the defense, I think, way more to give there. Brandon Carlo has fought it the entire playoffs. Torrey, not much there. Grizzlick, not much there. McAvoy was better against Carolina than he was against Tampa. So a lot of pieces that are just not there, just in top form for the Bruins. So they better get it straightened out, because Tampa is as good as they get in the league, and they'll be hungry to put them down too.
You mentioned the second line, the Krejci line, and I noticed that you just tweeted a few minutes ago the lineup for today. There are some lineup changes in that Kuhlman's coming back into the lineup. Clifton is coming back into the lineup as well, but they're keeping that Krejci line as is with DeBrusk. Do you consider shuffling that a little bit, because they haven't been nearly the same in this series as they were in round one?
Yeah, that's the trick, right? Is how quick do you make that hook? I think just given the data that they produced against Carolina, that they were the best line. So after three games of quietness against Tampa, I still think that Bruce has to give them a little bit more rope to say, hey, you guys gotta get with it. You gotta play with a puck and see what you can do, just because they showed against Carolina. Now different animal. It's you look at the lineups, it's JV and varsity when you compare Carolina and Tampa. Tampa, they're grown-ups. So, and then you look at the other options. Okay, can you put Coyle up on the right side with Krejci? I suppose, but then that diminishes your third line. Maybe Kuhlman, maybe Stanika in the future, perhaps. But the options aren't great. I understand what Bruce is doing. That line was really good against Carolina, and he's going to give them a chance to get going.
Corrali is still not able to play today. How big of a hole does that leave?
Well, it depends. I think the fourth line in general with him, with Nordstrom and Wagner, has been okay. They were okay for little spurts, but then they were not good in game two, and that's of course Corrali was hurt, but I think it didn't hurt going back to the Lindholm on the fourth line. I just think that's been a better unit. Now, yes, Sean has been a big time player. I didn't mind him at third line left wing with Coyle, and he's shown in the past that he can make plays in the playoffs. And when he's on, yes, they can use that fourth line as a matchup line against Kucherov, against Palat, against Point. But that line just hasn't been, for whatever reason, it just hasn't been good enough this year. So as an individual player, yes, PK, 5-on-5, the energy, the pedigree, the playoff pedigree that Sean brings, yes, big loss. But as a whole, I think Lindholm with Nordstrom and Wagner is a better line.
Talking to Fluto Shinzawa of The Athletic. Fluto, I'm just going to pop you on hold for a real quick minute as we do headlines here, and we're going to continue with you, okay?
Very good.
All right. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show heading into our bonus half hour right up to Bruins pregame after Sports Hub headlines.
Shoots and refs flashed off the glove. Take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming on the Sports Hub app.
I 98.5, the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. As we take you to 11:30 with our bonus half hour leading right up to Bruins pregame coverage. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, we've got Fluto Shinzalo, covers the Bruins for The Athletic. Fluto, three games into this series, your thoughts on Jaro Halak and how he has played to this point, and does he need a little bit more help from the guys in front of him, or in this case, a lot more help?
Absolutely, absolutely. You can't place any of the fault on Jaro here. You look at some of the goals that have gone in. Especially on the kill. Richie can't be slashing Shattenkirk to put himself in the box. Charlie, he can't be cuffing Kucherov to put them in the box. And then they've got to play a better structured kill in front of Jaro. Kucherov, now it's a different look, but I'm sure the coaches had them prepared for Kucherov being on his strong side rather than on the right side, and they've got to favor him. Now he's a world class player, so he's going to make his plays. But they've absolutely have to play better in front of Jaro. I understand giving him the hook at that point. It's just you're not going to come back at 4-1, and it was just so disappointing. You feel so bad for poor Dan Blatter to have to play in front of that mess in front of him. And it was not that much better in front of Jaro. So yeah, it's. You can't fault either of the goalies at this point, and you're going to ride Jaro from here on out. He absolutely deserves better from all of his teammates.
I mean, Vladder will get some, a lot more chances at this, but, thrown in there for his first game, I think Beersy pointed out earlier today, the guy hadn't played a game since March. Right. He gets thrown in the middle of a playoff game with his team taking one in the teeth, and doesn't get a whole lot of support in front of it. It's not really how you imagine your NHL debut is going to go when you're growing up, I'm sure. But
horrible. It's horrible for the guy. It's supposed to be a big event, right? It's written into these players' contracts that your parents get to be flown into the city when you make your NHL debut. Mm-hmm. Now, what's the poor guy going to think about when he thinks about his first game? Oh, I got shelled. And who knows? Mentally, what that does, not this is a goalie, right, against the best, arguably the best team in the league in the playoffs, and then to have that weighing on your mind if he ever gets another crack, that really sucks for him. So it does. Very, very unfortunate.
And hopefully, I mean, look, the season that he's had in Providence, it feels like he's got some game. And, he obviously will at some point get a chance to show it at this level, but that was not the situation that you want to throw a kid into. Let's talk about the team offensively. We talked a little bit about the Krejci line and that they've kind of gone MIA here in the last couple of games. And with the lineup changes today, you'll see a little bit of juggling, but some guys in particular. We've had a few calls this morning where people have brought up Nick Ritchie. What does Nick Ritchie bring to the lineup, and is he worthy of a lineup spot right now with the way that this roster is constructed?
Right now, yes. I think the other options that you have at third line left wing are Corrali, and he's injured, and then Anders Bjork. He's not ready for this. That he's shown that it's just not going to be happening right now. So Richie gets the goal the other night. He's there. He gets to the front of the net. He stays there, and it looked like he was obviously taking some abuse, but managed to score the goal. Exactly what you need. Had a few hits. Up and down player. I didn't mind him. The penalty the other night, yes, I did mind. You can't do that. The problem with Nick is it's just a little bit late. You'd like to see him just get there, arrive on time a little bit better than he does. But there's something there in terms of when he gets the puck, he can make plays. He's got a good shot, a good release. It's a heavy shot, so you'd like to see a little bit more interplay with him and Charlie to get him the puck in those shooting opportunities. So I think it hasn't worked out the way that the Bruins projected things would for him, but I think he's your best option right there, right now, just because the others are a bit more limited and not as big impactful when he's on his game. Now, that's on him to get on his game. But, I think he's the best third-line left-wing option at this point.
How difficult do you think it has been for he and Kasha? You know, they got picked up shortly before the deadline, and then they, you know, the league shut down within a very short time after that. How difficult do you think it has been? Because they're still kind of learning on the job, and they didn't really have, the end of the regular season as they would have, we thought, to figure out what their roles are and how they could best be used on this team.
Very difficult for both of them. Probably more so for Kasha, just because he missed all of camp. And then Richie, he missed a few days too. We don't know what the reason was, but yeah, that's just the shutdown and then missing camp. And then Richie, healthy scratch for, what is it, 3 games against Carolina. So very difficult for him. But on the other side, he should have been able to show more. This guy, he's been in the league a few years. First-round pick, wasn't he, or high-end pick. So a really, really hard situation for both those guys coming from Anaheim. But you also say, okay, let's... maybe you come to camp a little bit better prepared. I didn't think his legs were quite there when they were working out in Brighton. So maybe that was on him to be a little bit in better preparation for camp. It's a very difficult situation, but it is what it is. And they've been trying to play catch up. Kasha was more ahead of it in the first round against Carolina. A very good player, but for whatever reason, it's just the puck hasn't been on his stick and David and Jake's sticks. So that's the limitation there for Kasha. I still think he's good in terms of his pursuit up and down. He's seems to be in the right spots. Richie a little bit less so. So both of them have to be better.
Let's talk a little bit about the defense. And let's start with the captain. What have you thought of Zdeno Chara in this postseason? Obviously, the age is an issue. As anybody who gets up there, the game starts, or not the game, but the body starts to slow down a little bit. What have you thought of what he brings to the table for this team at this point?
In a very specific set role, I think he's been all right. The PK. When he's there, he eats up a minute 20, whatever, in the net front. He can occupy space. He can take away sticks. He can fill lanes. Okay there. He's going to take him and Charlie have been taking their punches at even strength against that point line. That's to be expected, especially given all the D-zone starts that the pair has been on for. So You're going to bleed against that Tampa line. But the rest of his game is just all these circumstances are colliding. The age, the layoff, and then the 0-60 intensity of the playoffs, and then the opponent. Maybe it would have been a better matchup, say, if you think about some of the heavier players, for example, Tavares or Matthews or some of these big centers, these big forwards. Point, he's 166 pounds, and as fast as they get, he looks like Barzal at times the way he skates. And Kucherov, he's a slippery player. You can lean on Palat a little bit, and maybe that's the matchup that is a little bit more in Zdeno's favor, but the rest of those two, it's just the pickup truck against sports cars. It just doesn't work out. So yeah, it's been a fight for Zdeno, as it has been for a few of their D's. But to be expected, right? Just given the layoff and then the age and everything, and this is a guy that's traditionally needed some reps to get into his game, and he hasn't minded taking those reps, but it's
such a thrown into the fire situation for him that he's trying to play catch up. And you can see he's trying, but some of the pieces just aren't falling into place for him.
How confident are you in Charlie McAvoy's future and what we've seen out of him over the course of the last few years as he's continued to develop? And I mean, there are you mentioned, you know, he and Chara have taken a few lumps in this series, but you're playing against one of the best teams in the league and one of the most potent teams in the league. That's going to happen. But overall, where do you feel like Charlie McAvoy is at in his development?
I think he is already one of the best all-around defensemen in the league. In his age cohort, you could say Seth Jones is ahead of him, but in terms and Makar and Hughes, they're just more offensively dynamic players. But in terms of what the Bruins need from him, which is to lead your team in ice time, second power play if needed, 5-on-5, D-zone starts, play physical, get up the ice, support the rush when you need. He's as good as it gets. Slam dunk, a Norris Trophy guy for a long time. That being said, I don't think he's been as good as he can be against Tampa. There's more that Charlie has to give, just because he's got everything. Maybe missing that really high end dynamic play offensively, but the skating, the hitting, the physicality, the awareness, the good hard first pass, getting up when he needs, being able to recover and go back for pucks, and helping out Zdeno. He's got everything. He is as good as it gets in terms of three-zone defensemen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Do you feel like that we will ultimately, eventually see more of that offense as part of McAvoy's game, or is he getting to the point where if it was going to happen, it would have happened?
Yeah, the latter point, Ryan. I don't see the real point per game like Carlson or Makar or Hughes or these guys. I don't think that's within him. That would have expressed itself by now. But yeah, I think he's a little bit muted just because of what he's asked to do. And maybe when Zdeno goes on, and I would think that Charlie would be paired with Grizzlick. Now there's a little bit more not hand holding, but a little bit more that he has to occupy there too, just because Matt is not physically able to go up against the first line battering physically, just because of his size. So Charlie will have to assume a little bit of that too. But in terms of up ice play, far more mobile partner in Grizzlick. So they'll be up the ice more. They'll be in possession of the puck more. Maybe that's when you see a little bit more offense from Charlie. But what he'll be asked to do will not change when Zdeno goes on. Maybe even more so that he'll be asked to play a little bit more shutdown duties on that first pair. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to what him and Grizzlick will be like as a number one pairing in the future, and maybe that future is sooner than we think.
We'll end on this. What do you expect to see today?
Well, Tampa is as good as it gets. Yes, the Bruins will have resistance in the first 10 minutes, and you would think that they will bring a fierce energy to their game, the top line, and the second line will be motivated to show that they're way better than they have been in the first three games. But Tampa, that's even without Stamkos, and I don't know about McDonough's status, but that's a thorough team with jam, with skill, with elite goaltending. So I think they'll be able to stand up. So it's going to maybe if the Bruins can break through in that first wave, good for them. But if they can't, they can't hang their heads. They've got to keep on playing discipline to their structure, limit their chances and Tampa's looks in terms of neutral zone access. They've got to be better with that and not giving them those rushes and those entries. And then play with the puck, get to the inside, maybe work the points a little bit more to free up that aspect and get your D's involved. And then hopefully maybe a power play goal here or there. But it's easier said than done against this opponent. They're as good as it gets.
Fluto, we appreciate the time this morning, and we'll look forward to talking to you again sometime soon, and enjoy the game today.
Okay, Ryan. My pleasure.
Fluto Shinzawa covers the Bruins for The Athletic, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. We take you until 11:30 this morning, and Bruins pregame. We can get to, if you got some last-minute thoughts before we get underway with Game 4, now's the time. 617-779-0985 as we will wrap up this edition of the Hockey Show next.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 985, the Sports Hub.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.